I thought for the Feast of Our Lady's Assumption, we could speak about St. Peter Canisius. Among the Jesuit saints, it was Peter Canisius that brought me into the Society of Jesus. Our pastor in Cleveland, when I was in grammar school, would come in every week, instruct us about Peter Canisius, the second apostle of Germany, and he was a Jesuit. I had never met a Jesuit before, several years before I did meet one, but I wanted to become like Peter Canisius. And as we go on, you will see what influence St. Peter has had on this synod. He is a doctor of the Universal Church and, surprisingly, was not canonized until 1925, almost 400 years after his birth. He was born in 1521 at Nijmegen in Holland, died at Freiburg in Switzerland in 1597. His mother died when he was still a child. Father remarried, and his stepmother turned out to be a very good Catholic and a loving foster mother. To please his father, he went to study law, though I should add canon law, at Louvain. But he didn't like it. While in college, he took a vow of celibacy. He left the study of law, went on to study theology, not necessarily to go on for the priesthood. Then he made a retreat under Peter Faber, who has since been beatified, the first priest of the Society of Jesus. Peter Faber. And because Faber is not yet canonized, he won't get a conference during the series, but I should say that Peter Faber had a great devotion to his own guardian angel and to the guardian angels of every person that he met. He taught that every city has its guardian angel. Every religious house has its guardian angel. He would say, this place has two. In any case, during the second week of his retreat under Peter Faber, he decided to become a Jesuit, and to make sure he would become one, he took another vow, this time to become a member of the society. He entered the order, was ordained priest, and soon after was sent as delegate to the Council of Trent. He was brought to Rome by St. Ignatius, and after 5 months in Rome, to get his final and solemn profession, he was sent to Vienna in Austria. In the meantime, he had gone to Ingolstadt to reform the university there, which had gone Protestant. In Vienna, the Jesuits started a new college, the condition of the Archdiocese of Vienna reminds us of what's going on now. I've got about 10 things that were wrong with Vienna when he came there. Many of the parishes without priests. The large Archdiocese of Vienna had not had one ordination in 20 years. Monasteries were abandoned. Religious were jeered in the streets. 90% of the Catholics gave up their faith. 10% of the Catholics did not practice their faith. More than once, Peter Canisius preached to empty churches. He won the people over by his practice of charity, especially to the sick and the plague-stricken. The then-reigning pontiff and the king wanted Peter to become Bishop of Vienna. But as you know, the Jesuits are forbidden by vow to become bishops. We are to take another vow to use every possible means to avoid becoming a bishop. So, though Pope and King wanted Canisius to be made Archbishop of Vienna, Ignatius, appealing to the Constitution, said, "Sorry, the most he would do would be allow Peter Canisius to be administrator of the diocese for 1 year, and then the Pope was to find someone else." In 1555, Peter Canisius published his famous catechism. It was a large, in modern editions, two-volume catechism. It was the first real catechism by Catholics ever printed. The Protestants had had catechisms for over 30 years. Canisius then proceeded to write a shorter catechism, and because some people needed something still more, he went on to publish a shortest catechism. Then he was made provincial of three countries, Austria, Bohemia, and South Germany, who had headquarters in Prague. He traveled a great deal on foot and horseback. The lowest figure we have is 30,000 miles. He worked very hard. His brethren would complain to St. Ignatius, send letters to Peter to stop overworking. One of his famous statements, worth memorizing, quote, Peter Canisius, "If you have too much to do, with God's help, you will find time to do it all," unquote, Peter Canisius. He wrote many books, a manual for Catholics, a martyrology, a bravery. The last 8 years, his hands were paralyzed, but not his mouth. For the last 8 years, he kept dictating until a few weeks before he died, he lost his voice. He stopped writing when he couldn't speak anymore. So much for a thumbnail sketch of St. Peter Canisius. Something about his spirituality. I have 12 features of his spiritual life that we can learn from and imitate. First of all, hard work. You might say, well, he was a Dutchman, and the Dutch are notorious for hard work. Well, I know Dutchmen, not all. Some work hard and some don't. He recognized with St. Ignatius that the greatest heresy to enter the modern world, which began with Martin Luther, was the denial of man's free will. It is all God's work. Sola fide was the motto of Martin Luther, by faith alone. All you've got to do is trust, and God does it all. Peter Canisius said, that's a lie. With Ignatius, Canisius taught, we are to pray as though everything depended on God, but work as though everything depended on us. We do have a free will. And if there is one aspect of sanctity that Peter Canisius teaches us, it is, in God's name, use your willpower. Second feature of Peter Canisius. In order to convert people, and there were millions to convert in his day, to convert people from error to the truth, it is not enough to preach to them. You must first practice charity towards them. In other words, you will win over those who have been misled by error only if you practice charity. Charity first, and then proclaim the truth. Third feature, patience in dealing with those who are in error. Peter recognized, as few of his contemporaries realized, what a terrible thing error was. Denial of the real presence, denial of Mary's divine maternity, denial of the papal primacy, denial of the sacrament of confession. Just a personal insult. If I ever wonder why 25 years ago one of my confessors and spiritual guides urged me to go to confession if possible every day, that's 25 years ago. I know why. I didn't know 25 years ago. Little did I dream that confession would fall into such widespread disrepute. So patience in dealing with those in error. Fourth feature. Peter Canisius was the first publisher, the first author, the first editor of the Society of Jesus. By now, Jesuits have followed in his footsteps to the tune of having published in 400 years thousands of books. From the time of Canisius, and his name is first in the bibliography of Jesuit writers, from Peter Canisius to the end of the 19th century, that is to 1900, there are about 20 volumes of bibliography, each volume about 2 inches thick, stands about 18 inches high, filled just with authors and titles, thousands and thousands and thousands. No other religious institute in the church publishes as much as members of the society. It was all started by Peter Canisius. He discovered it was a little late, because 1555 is a few years removed from the discovery of printing, which is about 1470. Imagine waiting 85 years before the Catholics finally, at long, dreary, sweaty last, came out with a catechism. And the Protestants had catechisms all over Europe. Isn't that awful? Now, because it's pertinent, let me note we're going through another revolution like the one then. Then it was the print revolution. Now it's the media revolution. And we're years behind the times as Catholics. That's the fourth feature, and I've got 12. Fifth, Peter taught that people don't become heretics out of malice. They become heretics out of ignorance. What was true in the 16th century is true today. The amount of error in otherwise nominally Catholic circles today is enough to make the angels and Peter Canisius weep. That's why how many mornings, 1, 2 in the morning, I was draped dead tired over the typewriter, typing. To get some more truth, one more page, one more article, one more book into print. I cannot tell you the number of times I've invoked, Peter finishes, to keep me going. You can see why I chose Peter finishes for the Feast of Our Lady's Assumption. In other words, in order to overcome evil, which is always the fruit of error, you must keep proclaiming the truth. Proclaim the truth. Proclaim the truth by what you say, by what you write, and by how you live. The nuns walking the streets without religious garb are not proclaiming the truth. Either they are no longer nuns, and then they are proclaiming what they are, or they are still nuns under vows, and they're not telling the truth. Am I clear? You proclaim what you are. That's Peter Canisius. Assume that most people are misled because of ignorance. What's true then is sadly true today. I was giving a Lenten lecture in the Newark, New Jersey Cathedral a couple of Lent ago, and after the Mass, some 6 seminarians came to introduce themselves and said, "Father, thanks for writing the Catholic Catechism. After our classes in the seminary, we go to our rooms and read the Catholic Catechism to find out what the Church really teaches." But it's comforting to know that the Church survived and became stronger than ever in rising over the error of those days, and we are confident will rise over the errors of these days. But my friends, there must be somebody who has the courage to keep, though it's a thin, rasping voice, proclaiming the truth. Sixth feature. Surprisingly, mind you, this is the middle of the 16th century. He had a great devotion to the Sacred Heart. No doubt, at least historians believe, because of some of the medieval mystic women saints in Germany, who were some of the earliest devotees of devotion to the Heart of Jesus. Hilda, Mechthilde, Gertrude, and so on. At any rate, Peter Canisius till he had a first class mind. Realize that you approach the Son of God with your heart and giving him even your mind. Seventh feature. He had, you would expect, a great devotion to Our Lady. Urge the recitation of the rosary. Made sure that her feast days were solemnly observed. Some of his prayers to Our Lady have remained over the centuries. In other words, a devotee of Our Lady talks to her. You claim that somebody is your friend and you practically never talk to the person. But friendship is, needless to say, suspect. Peter talked with Mary. Eighth feature. An extraordinary devotion to the Holy Eucharist. His devotion to the Holy Sacrifice was such that people would come from great distances to watch him offer Mass. So devoutly did he celebrate. He was one of the people that urged frequent communion at the Council of Trent, and was one of those who got the Council of Trent to pass a little-known decree, little-known because it took almost 300 years for that decree to really come to life. The Council of Trent, mind you, 16th century, encouraged daily communion. You'd never guess it, would you? Peter Canisius was one of those who, under instructions from Ignatius, made sure that the council passed that decree. And he spent hours before the Blessed Sacrament. Ninth feature, a very comforting feature. By all standards, St. Peter Canisius was not what we would call a mystic. The ecstasies and raptures that we associate with, say, even the young Stanislaus, not Peter Canisius. It seems that his sanctity, like everything else in his life, he had to work hard to acquire. I admired him from my earliest Jesuit days for his methodical plodding, if you wish, struggle after sanctity, that when the American provincials asked me to compose a prayer book for the Jesuits in the United States, and of course, part of our rule is to make a twice daily examination of conscience, I went to my friend Peter Canisius and shamelessly borrowed from him, though I did give him credit for the long several pages of quotation on how you examine your conscience typical Dutchman. 5 points. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the rule said you spend 15 minutes twice a day. Peter would spend 15 minutes twice a day plodding through those 5 points. In other words, Peter Canisius tells us that there are some people whose life God enters with floods, if you can pluralize floods of grace. Other people, it seems, only with trickles. Those who get only trickles, well, they just have to roll up their sleeves. And if the work gets harder, roll up the sleeves still higher. And plod along. Good to hear, isn't it? And unlike, again, Stanislaus, who stole heaven at the age of 18, Canisius, born in 1521, died in 97. That means what? 76, isn't it? He's the longest live Jesuit ever who became a saint. He kind of spoils the record. All the others are much younger, and some much, much younger. There was such a thing as being methodical in the spiritual life. There was such a thing as working hard in the spiritual life. There was such a thing as not looking for consolations in the spiritual life. There was such a thing as doing one's duty. I like the mispronunciation. It sounds better. Doing one's duty. I like that. It sounds harder. Doing one's duty in the spiritual life. Get up a certain time, do a certain amount of work during the day, going to bed, and getting up, doing your work, going to bed, getting up, year after year. And no complaints, Lord. Just a wee little rapture. Nothing big. Just a little ecstasy. Think of Peter Canisius. And no doubt to emphasize the fact the Lord kept him on earth for such a relatively, in those days, long time. Tenth feature. Obedience. You would expect a man of his caliber to be remarkably obedient. Ignatius, of course, was his superior general. He himself for years, Peter Canisius, was provincial. When the fathers complained in the college where Peter Canisius was rector, they complained that Canisius was too demanding in insisting that the students attending the Jesuit college, attend Mass every day before classes. Shades of the future. Not a good figure of speech, but you know what I mean. The fathers complain to Ignatius, he's interfering with a student's liberty. Canisius wrote to Ignatius, I don't think I'm interfering with these students' liberties. They are free either to come here or not come here. That's their first freedom. Once they decide to come here, they don't complain because we teach them Latin or Greek or history or whatever. They expect it. Part of our training in a Germany where so many priests were not even offering Mass and where most of the Catholics were not going to Mass. This is Canisius writing to Ignatius. It seems to me that in our schools they ought to get into the habit of going to Mass. They don't like it. Very simple. They don't have to come here. Ignatius wrote to Canisius and told him to read the letter to the community. Your rector is right that there be no more complaints about daily Mass. As far as I know, there were no more complaints. In other words, he was obedient. He wanted others to be obedient. And that went right down to the youngest student in the schools under his care. One problem that I think we're meeting in the church today is that so few of the young people are trained in obedience from childhood on. No wonder they become so rebellious as they grow up. Eleventh feature. Canisius was a model of prudence. No one more than Peter Canisius detested heresy and hated the untruth. But he realized, and he taught others to realize it too. If you want to win friends and influence people, you don't start by telling them what's wrong with them. Find out what's good about them. Find out what you can praise in them. And it may be after several hours of careful scrutiny, you might find only one little virtue that you might be able to praise. Well, start somewhere. Win their goodwill. Now, this is an understanding of prudence that I think bears emphasis. All I know, and the Lord could cut me off tonight, but in the years that I've been able to do whatever I have been able to do for the Lord, seeing, witnessing, often living with the most brazen disregard of the Church's teaching and legislation. But if I am to win people over, I must be kind, understanding. And that begins with my mind. I try to find what's good in them that in my own mind I can pray, and then maybe, just maybe, with the help of God's grace, we might win over those who are even estranged from God. Prudence, Peter Canisius would define, is the practice of charity in winning souls from sin back to God. Is the kind of prudence we don't hear much about these days. It can be a much criticized prudence by others whose orthodoxy is of the militant type, who go around slashing in all directions. Will I tell myself they have their grace and I hope I have mine? And my model is Peter Canisius. Finally, firmness. Firmness is a virtue. In fact, it's a cluster of virtues. It is, first of all, the foundation of certitude in faith. And Peter Canisius was absolutely certain. Never a shadow of doubt. That's firmness of mind. Firmness is constancy of the will. And that is firmness, which we call courage. So that as you read and reread, and by the way, the best biography of St. Peter Canisius was written by Father James Broderick. Do you by any chance have it? If you don't, get it. Read it. It's great. Reads like music. Fascinating, interesting, and brings out the character of one of the church's great saints, whose firmness was shown in his unwavering faith and in his fearless courage. St. Peter Canisius. Pray for us. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.